the meeting of the Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board on September 6, 2017, open. Our order of business always has community input first, so we have a number of people from the community. Do you have any input from any of you? Yes, ma'am.
Okay, sorry if I'm interrupting. I'm translating. Perfect.
It's not an interruption. Okay, then we have some special orders. We have the privilege of having Daniel Shea, our Assistant Attorney General, here. Advocate? Yeah. Sir?
Should I stand?
Wherever.
Okay, I'll stand over here. So, it's kind of, like I said, my name is Daniel Shea. I'm Assistant Attorney General here in the Vancouver office. The Attorney General's office obviously represents the interests of the people of the state of Washington throughout the entire state. So we're broken up into 27 different divisions that handle specialized needs for the people of Washington. My area of practice is actually child abuse and neglect cases here in Clark County and Skamania County for the Department of Social and Health Services. But your board has asked me to speak very generally about the immigration lawsuit that the office I work at, I should say the Attorney General's office, filed against the president regarding the immigration ban and the people from the Middle East. As you may recall, there was the executive order limiting green cards and people from predominantly Muslim countries coming into the United States, in which the Washington Attorney General's office filed suit claiming that it was, for various reasons, unconstitutional. That specific lawsuit is actually on technically pause because there was a second executive order that came after the one that Washington filed suit against, and Hawaii took the lead on challenging that lawsuit. So that lawsuit went all the way up to the Supreme Court, where they didn't want to hear the exact merits of the case, but stated that there could be some regulation or some, some criteria, I guess is the best way to put it, for people that don't have a bona fide connection to the United States. So that went back, and now Hawaii is challenging that ruling because what is a bona fide connection? There was an instance where a set of grandparents were denied entry to the country because they didn't have a bona fide connection, quote unquote. So that the district court agreed in Hawaii that that was too expansive again, and so the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is again hearing that to determine on what a bona fide connection is or is not, to try to help to determine that. Because the second executive order kind of changed the landscape, that's why Washington's specific one is on hold. So I'm not too sure what will happen with that. It really kind of all depends upon Hawaii's case and where that ends up. And then I'm sure that a lot of people saw on the news today about that. Unfortunately, I don't know too much about that because for two reasons. First of all, I was in Tacoma for meetings all day, so I was kind of secluded from the news media today. But second, because of the different divisions that we work in, there's not a whole lot of litigation cross information that we get. So it's very new, very developing, I guess, is the appropriate word. So since it was just filed today, there's not a whole lot that I've been made privy to at this time. I know it's not the best thing to say that I don't know, but unfortunately, given how quickly it came about from the order to the lawsuit, there's not a lot that has been disseminated to the out-of-line offices.
And that you're referring to the DACA?
Oh, sorry, yeah, the DACA. And the,
can you just explain just generally what that means and what that is in the executive order?
So my understanding is DACA, or the DREAM Act, President Trump has decided to repeal it with a six-month gap in the effectiveness to allow Congress to determine what, if anything, can be put in place. Washington State, along with others, have filed suit. I don't know exactly on what grounds, because the papers were just filed today, and so on our website, www.atg.wa.gov, it has the press release and all the information that is there. Also, on that website, there is information from the Civil Rights Unit. The Civil Rights Unit is the one that has handled the lawsuit on the travel ban and now is handling the DREAM Act lawsuit as well. So information from our office about what's going on with both of those lawsuits will be found on that website, and there's also resources. Specifically, there is an immigration guide on the Civil Rights Unit's website. It's about 109 pages that kind of outlines the different sections and advice from the office.
It's not the repeal of a law, it's the repeal of the executive order. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So if you have any questions, I can try to answer them with my very limited knowledge of what's going on with the current two lawsuits.
Are you in the back interested in this particular issue? Is that why you're here? Do you have any questions?
No, I think the major concern is about immigration related to families and individuals with developmental disabilities. I think that's a major concern.
And so that I'm not sure about if there's anything pending against that or related to that.
We didn't hear that. Sorry.
Yes, so I was asking, sorry, that the major concern is about immigration and families with individuals with developmental disabilities. I was mentioning to Trish earlier that the ARC of Washington and Washington, D.C. posted a document, well, had a preceded document from the White House where they said that they were parents, families with individuals with developmental disabilities were not going to have any privileged treatment in case they were processing any petition or any immigration issue. Before there was not so much a privilege, but they were looking to the hardship of the family if an individual had such a needs. And now they said they will not do anything special or any granting any, having any considerations for those families.
So, like I said, there's not much that I know about that specific issue, but also on the Attorney General's website, there is a place to where you can inquire about that kind of information, or the Civil Rights Unit specifically has a portal to where you can provide information like that and see how the office can help the team at the Civil Rights Unit, or primarily based in Seattle, but there is one attorney who they kind of divided the state into regions almost, and so there's one attorney who is based in Seattle, but kind of works on civil rights issues that are down here in the Vancouver area. So I can provide her contact information to Trish, who, if you want follow-up once the DREAM Act litigation is a little bit more developed and there's more information available to the public, that she may be able to fill you in.
How many people would be affected here in Clark County and in Washington?
Under the DREAM Act?
Yes.
I have not seen any number. I don't know how many people would be impacted by that.
Somebody open the door.
Yeah. I have a question. So it's kind of a general question about like how the Attorney General's office works. So it sounds like there's a civil rights, somebody that kind of is looking at civil rights things. Like if people have concerns, do they call their Attorney General's office with concerns or issues that they have about their rights? Or?
Yes. So the Attorney General's office is broken up into several different divisions and several different offices. So the office here in Vancouver is called a regional service office, where it handles representation of many of the state agencies, the Department of Social and Health Services, Department of Licensing, Clark College, ESD 112. In Seattle, Olympia, Tumwater, they have more of these what are called specialized divisions, the Civil Rights Unit, Consumer Protection Attorneys. So there is on the website different 1-800 numbers that you can call for civil rights issues, if you have consumer protection issues, and those are all routed to the central, for lack of a better term, office that deals with those specialized units which have been investigated and followed up with if necessary.
Just curious on something. Would DRW, Disability Rights of Washington, have all this on their website perhaps? Because DRW is Disability Rights Washington. It went from Protection Advocacy to DRW, which is Disability Rights Washington.
I'm not sure if they would have that on their website, the links to the Attorney General's website, or the 1-800 numbers for that.
Are you wanting a 1-800 number back there to call?
Yeah, that'll be free.
I'll have to look it up real quick.
Or you can send it to us and we can get it up.
If that may be easier, because my phone is apparently dead. That's what happens when you're traveling.
Okay.
Yes. Driving between here and Tacoma and then back. So,
long way to drive.
Yes. So I will email that information to you, the 1-800 number that'll be on the website as well. So.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
I'd love to stay, but because I was out of the office all day, I have to go back and to the 100 and some odd emails. So.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Drive safely. Have a safe trip back.
Well, I'm here, so it should run the clock.
Still be safe.
Someone just came here from Page. Is that you? And you would like to have some community input. Is that right?
Sure.
Could you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, you want me to do that now?
Yeah.
Sure. So from here,
you can come up.
What do you want?
We'll put her on the spot.
So I'm Jerry Clark. I am a peer resource coordinator with PAVE, which stands for Partnerships for Action, Voices for Empowerment. There will not be a test. It's a really long acronym. My job is funded through the Parent Training and Information Center. So on some of the documents I'm going to share with you, it'll say PTI. That stands for Parent Training and Information Center. So we provide families with information and resources regarding special education. So if they need help with the IEP process, if they don't understand their role on the IEP team, if they need help requesting evaluation, if they are in a dispute with the school and they don't know what their options are and they need information about what those options are, we can provide that information. We do not provide any legal representation or direct representation because we're not legal scholars or attorneys, but we can provide general information regarding the special education laws, the IDEA law, Part B and Part C. So we facilitate resources for families 0 to 26. Most of our families are dealing with school-age children, but we do help with those preschool transitions, and we do help some self-advocates in the early stages of higher education. So what I have for you is a little packet with some handouts that I created to just kind of generalize the information that you can provide. There's a general page about the principles of the IDEA law. There's a page about it's just kind of a flyover, what's in an IEP. A lot of times families don't really understand how to read the IEP. It's like a lot of pages in really small typeface. So this is what you're looking for in the IEP. And then I've got a page on preparing for the IEP meeting before, and then a little highlighted bullet point kind of thing to have in front of you at the meeting. Oh, did I talk about long-term goal setting? Oh, did we mention extended school year? We got to plan ahead. So these are just some guidelines. The other thing that I can provide, and I've got my business card on here, and if you want this in digital form so that it's easier to share perhaps with clients. The other thing that I can provide is letter templates. So if a family is wanting to request an evaluation or a reevaluation, and they maybe just don't have the skill set, like how to put that letter together, we've got a template that they can use as a foundation for that request. So, and we try to help families formalize the process so they understand that by making a written request, it puts a timetable in action. So once they've entered a written request, the school has a responsibility to respond. If they just have a casual chat in the hallway at the school, that may or may not set the clock ticking. So those formal letters can be really important for the family. Because sometimes 6 months later, the family says, I think I asked for an IEP meeting, but it never happened. And, well, did you put your request in writing? I don't know. I don't think so. I was standing outside the principal's office and, you know. So we try to help families understand that the more formal they are, the more formal the school will be in response. So I didn't print those for you because they're really not that helpful in a printed format. But if you have a family member who needs that help, I have a letter template for requesting an evaluation. I have one for requesting an IEP meeting, and I have one for requesting a facilitated IEP meeting if they want to involve OSPI and Sound Options, which is the agency that contracts with OSPI to provide that facilitated IEP. So I'm going to just give each of you one, and if anybody in the audience wants a packet too, I've got like 15 of these, I haven't counted yet, so I'll hand out what I've got, and you can certainly, and I've got more business cards, you can certainly reach out to me if you have a direct request. If you want to make a direct referral to me, my phone number and email are on the card, but they can also go to our website and do the intake themselves online if that's a thing that they can do, and then I'll make sure I get their name spelled right and everything's entered into the system correctly. So that 1-800 number and our website information are on this card as well. So does anybody have any questions for me about what PAVE does, what I can provide families with? Yeah?
I have a question. What kind of FTE are you? Are you a full-time position, a part-time position?
I am a full-time position paid for through a grant from the U.S. Department of Education. So the U.S. Department of Education funds our Parent Training and Information Center. So there are grants that go out to all the states for these types of centers. And how that PTI is set up is up to the state. So PAVE is an old organization. It's been in the state of Washington for about 30 years, since the late 70s, more than that. 40 years? Gosh, you can't do that. They're managing our PTI grant through the U.S. Department of Education. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
I have one more.
Yeah.
And probably maybe more.
That's fine. You guys ask away.
And what area are you covering? Is it just Clark County, or do you cover more counties in the region?
I definitely cover more counties in the region, and it's a great question that doesn't have a completely defined answer. We have, I think there are 8 parent resource coordinators in the state, and we cover certain regions, but we also cover certain content areas based on our own experiences and our knowledge, and also who's got time. So if one area of the state is really overwhelmed with referrals, it might go somewhere else just to balance the workload. So for the most part, I cover all of Southwest Washington. So all the way to the coast, and then in wherever all the counties who are the ones on fire. I cover all of the counties who are on fire right now. Yeah. We don't have any schools to go to IEP meetings, do we? But sometimes it's more based on content, so it kind of depends. But definitely, I cover all of the Southwest.
Yeah. So you evaluation. What kind of evaluation?
So if a student hasn't yet qualified for special education, the school does an evaluation to determine the federal disability category that would qualify them for special education. So on this very first page, I'm going to give you your copy, are the 14 qualifying disabilities. So when a family recognizes that something isn't working in the education system and there might be a disability impacting a student's ability to access education, they request evaluation. In order to qualify for special education, the student must meet criteria in one of these 14 qualifying categories. They're fairly broad. One of the categories, developmental delay, you guys are probably really familiar with, only goes to age 8. So one of the things that we try to highlight for families is to be aware if you've got a seven-year-old on an IEP because of a developmental delay, but there's still going to be some concern, there's still going to be some need for special services, they might need to be reevaluated to see if they fit one of the other categories so they can continue with their special programming. So that evaluation is a school evaluation. It's not a medical evaluation, and that can get a little complicated because DDA, the schools, and providers all use different criteria for evaluating, and they all use different time. You guys are like, I know this. So that can get confusing to the families. A lot of times they think that they've got a category of disability, but it's not one of these because it's not an educational category. It's a DDA category or it's a medical category. So we try to help them understand that too, that it has to be a school evaluation to qualify for special education. We also help with 504s, so families who don't qualify for IEP might qualify for some kind of accommodations under the 504 programming. So we help with those too.
Well, I'm curious on something. Another question I have is,
sure.
What about individuals that are on their own, that are still in school, that have like minimal support, like a caregiver,
yeah,
and don't have like families that are intermediate, that are outside? Is there anything like that?
That's a great question. We also do provide services to self-advocates. So there's just a different way of entering them into the system, but we can work one-on-one with the students. And we do serve students up to age 26. So we do serve some college students and some students who might, or not, maybe they're not even students, they're in the workforce and they're trying to get support services through DDR and they need a little bit of extra information, resource contacts, whatever, in that process.
How
we help them too.
How far does that go? Does that go from like just the 26, or does that go from 26 on when they get older?
Yeah, he provides services to 26, and again, that, you know, that 21 to 26, we don't have a lot of clientele, but if somebody calls us and has a need, we'll do our best to serve them. Yeah, but we are focused on the education part, so, you know, the DDR stuff we do get a little bit engaged with, but we're mostly just trying to help make referrals and get people into the right programs and the right support services. Yeah, great questions.
Thank you.
Does anybody else have any questions? Yeah?
Mine isn't a question, it's a comment. I have a son with a disability, and when he was in school, we had major issues with the school district. And PAVE was one of the resources that we used and was a fantastic help to us. And being able to deal with those issues with the school district. And I'm just, I don't know if anybody here has school-age children, but boy, I tell you, PAVE is a fantastic resource that helped us to be able to step up and, you know, advocate for our son.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, sometimes just having another professional in the room, when you go into an IEP meeting, everybody kind of sits up a little straighter, and, you know, I didn't get my name tag quite on, but yeah.
Hi,
honey, how are you?
I think I'll take it close. One more.
What's your name again?
Gabriella,
yeah, we met. Yeah, in a meeting. Yeah. It's good to see you
again. Good to
see you. So I just have three left. Should we do a lottery?
Draft lottery. Any other questions?
If anybody else wants a business card, I can send you all of this documentation on email. Yeah. We do have Spanish language services. I unfortunately can't provide them. I wish I could. No hablo español. But we do have a Spanish language parent resource coordinator on our staff. And we also have Spanish language documents and intake. So if you get on our website, there is access to Spanish language documents. So yeah, look us up.
Okay, Carrie, thank you very, very much.
Yeah, thank you.
We have Helen from DVR going to talk to us about the order of selection. Welcome, Helen.
So I'm Helen Christensen. I'm the lead counselor at the Vancouver DVR office. I'm here today to talk about order of selection, and people were saying, well, might wanted to know what is order of selection. Well, starting November, we're going to implement order of selection. Order of selection is that due to the funding, lack of funding, so to speak, we will only provide service to people with most significant disability first. People come into our service, we usually go through the intake and then we get released to get medical records. When we review the medical record, we will determine what category they're going to be on. There are 7 categories that we look at. The first one is mobility issue. Second one is work tolerance, and then communication issues, self-care issue, mental health issue, cognitive issue, and work skill issue. We go through each category and we determine, sorry, I'm gonna take up some of your space. We determine how many functional limitation they have. So we have 7 categories here. And then we go to the next screen where we decide how many, if they have 3 or more, then they become what we call category 1, which is most significant category. So from now until November 1st, nothing will change for a client that already in our system, but after November 1st, we will continue to provide service to people that already have an employment plan, so that will not affect them. People that's receiving pre-employment transition services, students and, that have IEP or 504 plan, it will not affect them. But if people from the pre-employment transition services apply for DVR service and they are determined not to be on the category 1, which is the most significant disability category, then they will no longer get the pre-employment transition services. So to prepare our client for this upcoming big changes, we sent out a postcard to our client probably 3 weeks ago, and I just brought a copy of it. Yeah, I can divide some this way. So this postcard that we sent out, I think it was 3 weeks ago, it indicated that we're going to go on order of selection on November 1st, and it explained we probably need some more on that side.
On that side? Okay.
Yeah, I didn't give them enough.
Yeah.
So after the order of selection has been determined, and let's say an individual isn't in that most in need category, what types of referrals or assistance can you give them?
Well, at this time, we will refer them to our partner in the community. It could be WorkSource. It could be a variety of programs that we'll refer them to. Today, the director came down and we were asking the director if we can continue to provide counseling and guidance, and they're not deciding that because that's one of our core services, counseling and guidance. That's what the counselor does, yeah. And so, there's a frequently asked question that I make some copies. I hope I have enough copies.
Okay.
So this frequently asked question, it says when and why. Well, when is November 1st. Why is because we have increased people that applying for DVR services, and the funding stayed the same. Another big reason is that because the Workforce Investment Opportunity Act required DVR to spend 15% of the budget to provide pre-employment transition service to students. That's on IEP 0504. And because this requirement, about $8 million per year is going to this pre-employment transition services. So because of these two reasons, the primary two reasons, we're going on order of selection. So we still wanted to make sure that people who has most significant disability, who need our service most, will get the service first. And then it goes down to next category and next category. Yes.
What about for people that are trying to obtain DVR services that are just coming into the program, that are starting to try to come into the program? Will that have an impact on anything that with that specific individual with getting into DVR or not?
Well, so when, like I say, when people come in to our program, we will take their application, and we will take their consent so we can go obtain medical records. Mm-hmm. And then when we review the medical record, we will determine how many category of functional limitation they have. And like I say, there are seven category. Right. And once we review the record, we will have a better understanding of what kind of limitation, what kind of disability they have. And if they have, three different, we talk about functional limitations, there's seven of them. If you have three, you'll be staying on the category two, which means you'll be on a waiting list. But if you have three or more, you'll be on the most significant disability category, which you get the service first. Because our mission is to help those that needed us most, and those with most significant disability will be the one that gonna need us most, and we serve them most.
I'm just recently in the process of going through DVR, and I've just submitted an application. That's why I asked that question, is because I'm in that process. So I just wonder if perhaps maybe that would affect anything that I'm doing with DVR.
Well, can I ask how long ago you submitted your application?
I just recently done that here within like the last about 2 weeks or so.
Okay. So if you can go through we have steps that we go through. You go through the intake, and you go to eligibility, then you go to vocational assessment. Mm-hmm. If you can get all this done and get into plan by November 1st, it won't affect you. But if you are unable to get to that step, then it would depend on how the severity of the disability that we provide the service.
November 1st or October 31st?
November 1st.
Yeah. Well, you need to get into plan by October 31st, right?
Yes.
November 1st.
Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of time we spend. People couldn't decide, well, which is a good fit job for me, and we go through the community-based assessment. When we do community-based assessment, we take them to an actual job site to see how they perform and to figure out what's a good fit job for this particular individual. It's kind of like trying out jobs, but we don't do that ourselves. We have what we call CRP that they do it for us. And what a lot of times they're busy and they keep wanting more time and more time. So if we can get through the vocational assessment real quickly, we can figure out what is a good fit job for you, then we can put you in plan right away. And that's what I'm trying to do with all my client on my caseload. However, we were told, we're not supposed to do that. You just go with the flow, and whatever happens, happens. You just lay back and relax,
So fast flow. We turned off the mic for that.
Oh, yeah. Did you? But, I think the people is going to be pretty frustrated because they come with the hope that they will be able to get back into to work in the job force. But then again, because there's disability is not severe enough, you know, they're going to be placed on the waiting list. And I think that's something that we will have, we will experience when November 1st comes around. So there's a public forum, not public forum, it's almost like a webinar that's going to take place so that if public has any questions, they can ask. If it's on the internet, it's going to be on September 18th, and there are three sessions at 10:30 to 12 p.m., from 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., and from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. If you have internet, you're welcome to go on internet to our website. If you don't have internet, there's going to be a blog party at the DVR, at the DSHS office, at the old staff room, and I'm just going to pass this out. So everybody who has question about the order of selection, you're welcome to come. We're going to bring food and drinks.
Is the webinar, is that just specifically to your DVR office, or is that a stage live?
It's just DVR to answer question for the public. Regarding
DVR throughout the whole state, not just Vancouver.
Correct. Okay. And that blog party is for people that doesn't have internet access. You can come to our office and we'll have that.
Cool. Yeah.
So, Helen, just to clarify, my understanding is that if 20 people show up at DVR on November 1st and 15 of them have four of these areas impacted, that those people would get prioritized, and then the remaining five would then be on the wait list, or depending on however many you can serve at that time, right?
Well, so it depends on.
They would be second priority if they had only one or two or three areas.
Limitations, functional limitations.
Yeah.
So if you only have three, you go on waiting list. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you have one, of course you're going to be on waiting list. Yeah.
And typically for people who are served by the county and Developmental Disabilities Administration, do you see those people having multiple functional limitations in your experience?
You know, each case is unique. A lot of them come with cognitive limitation. However, a lot of times they also come with mental health issue, anxiety and depression. And then they also come with an ability to take care of themselves. And they also sometimes come with physical limitation. So that being said, there's already four. Mm-hmm. But there are individuals who is pretty high function. They don't have physical issue. They probably don't have mental health issue. They can take care of themselves. They probably only have one area of functional limitation. That would be the cognitive part. Mm-hmm. So each individual is different. It's a big spectrum. Yeah. So a majority come with intellectual disability issues. A lot of times they have a lot of anxiety as well, and they are unable to care for themselves. They live in group home, and that goes to another category too. So I would say a majority of them, like I say, it's so unique. Each individual is different, but I would say they usually come at least three functional limitation category. Yeah.
So the people that this group is generally working with, or that we provide employment supports for, will most likely be, I'm gonna say this, I won't make you say this, but it sounds to me that the people who are in employment supports through the county generally will be kind of the higher priority people, is what my understanding is.
So how about for individuals that live on their own that are by themselves?
It still goes back to, do you have functional limitation due to mobility issue, due to work tolerance issue? Are you able to communicate? We have people that's nonverbal, we still, regardless, you live in a group home, you live individually, we still go through our seven categories. Yeah. Okay. Thank you
very much.
You're welcome.
You're
welcome. Thank you.
Here we have David Lundin from UDR.
Thank you.
Big agenda.
Thanks for having me. Is this a good place for me to stand?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. So I have a laundry list. Bobby just asked me, how the hell are you going to be able to read that when you get up there? And isn't it funny how your own handwriting you can read? Well, I don't even need those yet, which is interesting. So I have this laundry list of stuff. I just thought I would update you on things that I thought were relevant. And then I'm certainly open to any questions you might have about what's going on in our world. Closer to the smoke as it is. So the existing programs, since the last time I've talked with you, which may have been maybe 6 months ago, we have continued to add people in the programs that we're handling. So in the Community Connection program, we actually added 4 people, which I think is kind of a cool thing. In the supported living work that we do, we've added, our hours have gone up about 20%. Which means we've got, we have a few more people, but we're doing more work in the community. And we've added a little bit in terms of the payee and guardianship stuff that we're doing. So, and I know that because my hand gets sore signing checks once or twice a week that are so, so big. So those are kind of the core of what the ARC has been doing, you know, for years. The second thing I want to tell you is we actually have... we have some new programs that are starting. So the first one is we have a respite care program that we're now providing. And actually September is the very first month. So we've got a core, I don't actually have the activities with me, but Juanita, the woman who is responsible for our programs, is she and her team have put together a core group of activities for people who want respite care. So the kind of the goal here is to try to find 2 or 3 hour blocks of time. And they went out to the community and they actually asked people what kinds of activities and what and how long and what days of the week. So they put together a calendar for the month of September. They're actually now working on the one for October, and they I think we'll have it done. I asked them to have it done by the 12th or the 13th of the month, so sometime next week, so that people can kind of plan ahead for October. So we're not great at really knowing exactly what we wanted to do. We're trying to be reactive and kind of evolve into a respite program that really benefits people in the community who actually want to use it. So that's actually live now, and it started. The second program, we have a contract that I haven't signed yet for community guide and engagement, but we'll soon be doing that through the state. This third program, a peer mentoring program, I have a contract that I haven't received yet, although they tell me it's in the wings, but we're going to do this peer mentoring program. When we met with people from the state, what I asked them is probably the same obvious question anybody would ask is, is there anybody in the state right now doing a peer mentoring program that you should suggest that I would go and look at? And they said, no, we really don't think anybody's doing it the way we'd like to do it. So I kind of called around, made a lot of phone calls. And then not knowing exactly, we sketched out what we thought would be a really cool peer mentoring program. So a peer mentoring program being, you know, somebody with the mentee, if you will, and a mentor. So both of these people with developmental disabilities, and then the peer mentor part of the program is kind of monitoring to make sure that this relationship is actually working. So the thing that we decided to do is we kind of sketched out a program as to how we would design one of these. So we had written 2 grants, which actually totaled $50,000, and I'm going to kind of do this a little bit more by the books rather than the seat of the pants, and kind of develop a program once I get these grants funded to go out and actually build a peer mentoring program. So we'll be a little bit longer, hopefully no longer than, you know, sometime in the beginning of the calendar year 2018. So we intend to have one of those here in the here in the county. And then person-centered planning. So we have decided that we really think doing person-centered planning. Our challenge is actually finding a resource that has the the bar is pretty high in terms of what they want for their program. You know, a degree and 10 years of experience or something like that. So we're actually out in the community right now trying to find some people who will be part of that. But I have a person-centered planning contract coming. So anyway, those are kind of some new programs that are right in front of us right now, not you know, 2 years down the road, but right in front of us. See, the third thing I wanted to tell you. Oh, we have a new parent-to-parent coordinator who is in the guise of Bobby Bjork, who I introduced you all to a while back. Bobby came to us in April. She actually started as our development coordinator, which is a position I made up to try to get us out in front of the community. Our parent-to-parent coordinator left in August, I think. But I've actually asked Bobby to kind of do both of these things. So I'm not sure that I wouldn't say that it would be rude to say this is going to be an upgrade because Bobby's just, you know, a wonderful person, which she is, by the way. But it will be an upgrade, I think, for the community because Bobby is actually there 5 days a week. And unfortunately, the way we had it structured before, we had somebody who was basically funded for 2 days a week, and they were there 2 days. And if you called in, then great, you got all kinds of service and accommodations. So Bobby's there 5 days a week, so we'll be able to kind of move her orientation so that whenever somebody's calling in, at least Monday through Friday, there. And I've been in Bobby's office when she gets one of these phone calls. And for those of you that haven't had an opportunity to meet her, she's one of the most engaging people I've met in forever. And because of her personal background, she immediately becomes part of these people's lives. So I think that this is, I think this will be a really good thing. Now, the other side of that is Bobby needs to learn this person, her parent-to-parent program. She's going to spend, I think, a weekend with all the other parent-to-parent people at the end of September, is it? In Yakima, and they're going to all get together and talk about what's working, you know, best practices, models, whatever else. And I think that not only behooves her to be there and learn from other people, but I think it really benefits us in the community here because we'll find out what's working, you know, in other places. So anyway, Bobby Bjork is the person who's responsible for that now. For other activities I wanted to talk about. So we're going to be this weekend at and probably everybody else in here is going to be at the Peace and Justice Fair, right? Everybody know about that? So if you are there, we're going to have a couple of our board members, and then we have this group who, one of the groups who works with us is Clipped Wing. Does anybody know Clipped Wings? These are flight attendants that were, they're retired flight attendants, and I think they're American Airlines now that I said that, because I remember when I first met them making a bad pun, which I shouldn't have made, about being dragged off an airline. And so if any of you are there, and if they have their Clipped Wings, don't make jokes about that, because they're very serious about this. Anyway, we're going to be there. What we're trying to do is
Where is it?
You didn't know about this? Oh my God, everybody's doing it. 9 to 4 down at Esther Shore. And there's going to be music, and there'll be a lot of people down there. We're going to be down there and talk about new programs that we're doing and things like that. It'll be cool. It'll be a lot of fun.
Is it this weekend?
This weekend. Yeah, the 9th. Yeah.
They have a website.
They do, actually. Yeah, they do. I'm sorry. We're involved in the Give More 24. Does anybody know about this? Okay, if you know about it, then I want to tell you more about it. What we're trying to do is we're trying to involve ourselves more in community activities, okay? And that's part of why we brought Bobby aboard, and I think she's certainly got the personality for that. We're working with all the other arts in the state of Washington, too. This is something that I know everybody in here would know Sue Elliott, and I've known Sue for a long, long time.
Can you tell us about Give More 24?
Bobby.
Sure. Give More 24 is a 24-hour fundraising campaign put on by a community foundation. And a lot of nonprofits from the area are going to be participating that same day. Love from the community. Each cause has their own page within this Give More 24 site. So the idea is just to bring awareness to, you know, your particular cause, and they have a little bit of competition kind of thrown into the mix to encourage more giving. There's matching funds and different time frames for giving as well. So, yeah, really neat.
When is that?
It's September 21st.
So I was saying about we're working with the other arts around the state. It's kind of interesting, you know, not working first person with the arts. I always would have thought that all the arts in the state of Washington, you know, in the Northwest, and you know, would work together and talk to each other, and they didn't. And I got a phone call from this guy who started about 3 months after I did, who's a guy running Kitsap and some other, whatever the other arc is, Jefferson County. And he introduced himself and kind of met, and we got together. I have a house near Bremerton, and we just got to know, you know, each other and what those arcs did. And he said to me, you know, we should try to get everybody together. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, sure, that they must get together. So I called Sue, and she said, oh, you know, we used to a long time ago. I can't remember who was president then. So we ended up just kind of irritating everybody. Let's all get together. And we did this, I can't remember, 2 months ago or something like that. And actually, you know, as what normally comes out of it, I think there were nine ARCs represented. They agreed that we should get together every quarter, every 4 months, something like that. So we've got another one coming up, actually in Bremerton, at the end, on the 29th and 30th of September. And we've got like 2 days worth of agenda put together. Then we're going to host in January. So anyway, you know, I'm talking about meetings, big deal, right? Now, I think there's something good about actually knowing what's going on in other parts of the state. And, you know, again, not unlike what we were talking about with the parent-to-parent, but, you know, kind of locking together so we can learn some of the things. Because there's some really cool things going on, especially in our cities, and some interesting things going on programmatically in Spokane and Seattle. You know, we're kind of leading the charge on that. We want to, you know, be part of a bigger and better thing. And then we're working with some other art organizations outside of the state too, for personal reasons, because we can learn some things from them. Number six. You won't care about this, but Darla will. We're meeting with a lot of, you know, legislators, you know, local, county, state. We had a representative, Kraft, in our office was yesterday, and you know, said, yeah, I love people like that, because they actually will sit down, and when they have time, they will listen, you know, to what it is that we're doing, and hopefully we're saying the things that, you know, represent what the community would really like us to do. But I've been doing this long enough now, I have a general sense of what I should and shouldn't say. We've been spending a lot of time meeting with local commercial organizations, and as Bobby said, she says it better than I do, you know, getting the love, which people could misunderstand if I said it. But you know, we do have a number of people who are, you know, actually donating, you know, money, goods in kind, those sorts of things to us, and in the last 6 months that's really started to heat up, so we'll continue to do that, because I think that is how you really know whether an organization outside of the people that it serves is really understood and accepted in the community. You know, you get people volunteering, like these, you know, retired flight attendants that I talked about, who are really interesting people, or people who want to donate money to you, or, you know, donate, you know, some goods. Now, you know, we've been collecting these goods in the community, so that sounds really great, engage, but actually going outside of what it is that we've been doing for years, we're starting to see an awful lot more of that. We're working on a lot of social enterprise stuff, which at some point in the future I'll update you more on. We've got some interesting things going on. I came up with this crazy idea. A lot of people donate medical equipment to the ARC. So, you know, and it's all sorts of things, you know, from wheelchairs to, you know, these pulleys to get out of bed. And unfortunately, they sit in our warehouse until somebody somebody with initiative calls and says, hey, I need a bed, a this, a that, and then somebody goes rummage around and they get it and say, yeah, come and get it. So I have this idea that we could start this online medical exchange place. And we tell everybody, here's everything that we have if you need it. And we have to find a way to publicize this. But if you need it, go to the website and come over and get it. And a lot of people who need this equipment, especially people who need this equipment who, you know, it's maybe not covered by insurance or they don't have the money to go out and get it. And one of the things that I thought was, and this is a value thing with me, but I'm happy to give, you know, a $3,000 wheelchair to somebody. But what I'm going to ask them is, I'm going to tell them, here's what it's worth, and do you have anything that you can exchange for it? So what do I mean by that? So some people have kids that could mow lawns. So, you know, I've got this idea of this kind of giant barter system where I'm going to put, along with having medical equipment, I'm going to have sort of like a Craigslist, if you will, you know, five lawn mows or something like that. Anyway, as some of my plans generally get, they get overcomplicated and people can't understand it after a while. But anyway, that's one of these little things that's kind of going on. Because eventually, some of the things that we do, it takes us time and manpower to do this, and we have to monetize it somehow. I have to be able to pay for these things. So that's why I'm making it overcomplicated. Those are some of the things that are going on. Question?
Monetize.
A couple.
Yeah.
So, go back to the peer mentoring project. Yeah. Is that through DDA and DDC or DDA? The funding and the the initial information and outline about how to or what it means to be a peer mentoring project?
Yeah, so we met with Chris Jorgensen.
Dobson.
I always refer to as Chris Hyphen because it's too many names for me to remember. So we met with Chris. And yes, and she's with DDA, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where we sat down and we said, what is it that you think this would look like? And that's when we started to kind of scope out how would this look, and which led us into the, we don't really know enough about this. We really need to find out a lot more about this. And to do that, we need to find some money so we can go out and do this in a proper fashion. So that, yeah, that's where it's coming from.
So have you accessed through the DD Council, the self-advocacy organizations, because they have great ideas about how this ought to work and how it ought to look?
Yeah. So once we get the money, then we'll go to people and start asking questions.
Start presenting your ideas.
Say it again.
Start presenting what ideas you have and whatnot. And then I'm curious to know a little bit more about the, is there criteria for the respite and the guardian situation at the ARC?
No, there's not criteria in the sense that, what kind of criteria are you talking about?
Well, like for my, somehow, don't ask me how this happened, but I got put in respite and I never qualified for it, and it took me 2 years to realize that, okay, we made a mistake, you know, you should have never been here in the first place. So what I was questioning is that there are people who are like a limited resource that can't afford to go out and do a lot of different things, like because they have, you know, housing costs and whatever and so on. There's activities that are outside of there, like bowling or grants or things that can be done to help individuals that are like low income based. It's kind of more what I was thinking along those lines and kind of wondering if there's a specific criteria for that.
No, because we have developed this for, as I said, we're kind of evolving what the activities are. So when Juanita went out and did this, she talked to people and built this first month's calendar. And to be honest with you, I think I saw it last week, but I don't really remember what's on it, how many days are on it.
Right. Well, I'll give you an idea. I love to participate with Parks and Rec, and I love the activities they do, but because of a limited budget, it makes it very hard to be able to participate in things because of the cost. It's so ridiculously high that maybe there could be something like a grant or something that could be given to help people like that. To help people that are wanting to participate in things actively to be a part of their community and whatnot.
So it's a good idea, and once we get it up and running, once we start to get it funded, you know, we can look at that. So I'm going to actually write this down.
That sounds kind of like the IFS waiver. Is that part of your community guides and community engagement program?
But we haven't started it yet. I haven't signed a contract, so we're not there yet.
It is funded through, that's what it's funded through.
Yeah.
Through DDA.
So it is the DDA IFS waiver.
Right.
And that sounds like more applicable to your question, because mm-hmm. that has more to do with engagement in the community and activities rather mm-hmm. than a respite location. To go to, but
you have to be in a family with your parents
right.
to access that.
Right. Yes.
And ARC for years actually had a fund, and I don't remember what we called it, where we could donate money to there, and then you could use those dollars. You could apply for those dollars and use it for parks and rec or swimming lessons cool. or whatever. And we had people around the community donating for that.
I'm being told for health reasons I need to get out and be a little more active because mm-hmm. I'm not doing enough to be active in the community, and my doctor's like, oh, you need to get active, because he says if you don't do something, you're not going to have anything left to do anything about it. If you don't get out there and start participating in something more actively, but not just for your own sake, but for your health as well.
Right.
So.
I have another question.
Yeah.
Different topic. Back to. Are your barter system, equipment, the exchange, are you aware of the Our Time Bank?
Yes.
Here in Clark County?
Yeah. I've heard of it.
I would suggest that you explore that because they already have a structure in place and several hundred members, mm-hmm. and that's how they function is on barter and exchange. And I think you wouldn't have to create or reinvent the wheel. You could plug in there and you'd have an automatic constituent base to begin with. So I would highly... Our Time Bank?
Along the same note, there used to be a connection with the hospitals over Legacy Hospital and several of the other hospitals that have PTOT services, and they then would refer families over to us to get their equipment and stuff, and I think that communication has gotten broke down at some point along the line. But reconnecting with them, we used to have people come in almost daily to get equipment. So,
Who was it?
Legacy. Legacy and, yeah, the different therapists.
Yeah.
They would just send the families on.
So. Yeah, I mean, the best thing we can do is to, people are in the habit now of donating stuff to us and calling us. I just want to get it. I want to get it back in people's hands who can use it.
There's also the Caring Closet. I think they're focused on seniors.
It's called Caring.
A Caring Closet.
A Caring Closet.
Yeah. CaringCloset.com or .org. CaringCloset.org.
The?
A Caring Closet.
UH.
I have one more question, David, in regards to your respite. So is it group respite then, not individual respite?
It's group, yeah.
Are you looking at going to individual respite?
She has it as something for later on. Right now, we started with group. Yeah.
Okay. I have another question I need to ask David.
Sure.
Let me explain my situation a little bit. A lot of individuals who live with family members qualify in the respite category. But what I see a lot of are like people like me who live on their own, who have, you know, little or what family support is, we don't meet that criteria. There needs to be something seriously looked at when they decide to make a decision for what's eligible and what's not. They need to do something to change that so more people can be able to participate and be more actively involved in things and more inclusion, you know, towards more inclusion based instead of segregated more.
I hear you. Go ahead, Bobby.
And we also do offer, if you ever go on the ARF of Southwest Washington website, you'll see lots of other community-based free activities for anyone can participate in. So I would check that out, People First, if you went, and the community walks that we do, and there's other things that pop up. So be sure and check that out.
Yeah. Okay.
And for those of you that haven't been on our Facebook page and become a friend,
sure.
As a favor to Bobby, if you would do that, she's actually making it come alive. She forced me to get on there. Which was against my better judgment. But that's just kind of cool. Because now I have friends who say, I see on your website, I see blah, 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 blah. And I said, oh, you're on our Facebook, huh? Because I get them too. So now I can kind of be, you know, au fait with what they're talking about. Other questions?
Thank you very,
thanks,
very much.
Yeah.
The October events.
Okay.
Finally, sorry to make you wait.
Oh, no. Everybody's whistling. It's all good stuff. I'm going to go over here. It seems like that's the best angle.
And I can go off.
My name's Ryan Farrow, and I work for a nonprofit called WISE. I work out of the Portland office. Our main focus is providing training, technical assistance, education, and conferences, and we do a lot of different things. It's all based around working with businesses to find, to help hire people with disabilities. And this, I don't know, has anyone been to the October Employer Awards event? Yeah, okay, I'm sure. So, but great. But I'll explain a little bit about it because it's gonna be similar in the past year, but there's some different things. I'm here to tell you about that event specifically. So the October Employer Awards, it's a cool opportunity because October is Disability Employment Awareness Month. And the theme this year from the Department of Labor is inclusion drives innovation. So the focus this year is really trying to collect a lot of stories from people who are employed and there's innovative practice going on. So if that's a job developer that's working with someone specifically to find a good job carve or restructuring a job to find someone that good fit. This event's really cool because it creates a lot of energy around what supported employment is, and it recognizes all the different facets of who's involved in that process. And so the nominations, actually, we just had a meeting before this and we were reviewing the nominations, and this year we got about 40 nominations from different categories, which is pretty huge, yeah. And the different categories are, there's a large employer, which is 50 or more employees at their location. It's small employer of the year, which is 49 or less. Employee of the year, so someone who's receiving services and is currently working. There is the David Hannawalt Employment Specialist Award. And then there's the Dennis Campbell Outstanding Service Award. So all these different categories are an attempt to recognize all the people who are doing really great work in our community right now. I did put some invitations in the back there too, so feel free to take a stack if you'd like to hand them out. We'll have more available. I'm sure we'll have a stack in the main office here. The structure of it's really cool because we have the opportunity to recognize people not just by winning the awards, but also people who are nominated. So everyone will be recognized for being nominated. And there's going to be a collection of video vignettes that we've been doing. We're working with this professional videographer to do, it'll be 5 or 6 different videos by the end, which helps drive the programming. So we don't have a keynote speaker that's doing predominantly the main, the speaking and driving the program. It's kind of Academy Award style, almost, like instead of having all the nominations and all the possible videos, it's more about highlighting the cool stuff that's going on in those videos and then presenting the award in that category. So Employee of the Year, for instance, before that we're going to have a video, a collection of different people working in a lot of different jobs from a lot of different agency perspectives as well. This year our MC though is Kelly Love from Legacy. She's been our MC the past couple years and she does a fantastic job. So I have the luxury of being the person who's the project lead on this, and so I'm kind of facilitating this and working really heavily with the board to review the nominations, and they are very intentional in the way they look through and seeing who would be a good nomination to become the awardee of this year. That's what we're doing. Any questions on that? Or anything I missed that the board wants to
know? Ryan stepped up and is doing a great job.
Oh, thanks.
Did we say the date and the time and the location?
That would be probably really helpful. So October 17th is the date. It's a Tuesday evening. It's at the Heathman Lodge. And there's going to be a dessert bar during the welcome reception from 4 to 5 o'clock. And at 5 o'clock is when the program starts. Thanks, Patrick. And that's when the award ceremony will begin. And I can't stress enough, it's a really fun event for me because I have worked in Clark County for a number of years. I used to work for an organization here called Trillium. And I was a job developer and job coach and was able to participate in the process of nominating people, seeing the stories I would like to highlight, and then attending and then really taking that energy from that event and then continuing on the next year. So it's celebrating success from the past year and then taking that forward and kind of the call to action of what we're going to do now to keep advancing outcomes for people with disabilities in employment. Yeah. Yeah, so please come and tell all your friends, tell all your family members.
Can you send us the information electronically so we can give it out?
Yes, I can. Yeah, so the best way for everybody to get that, I'm not sure, but Darla, I know I have your contact information. Yeah. But
we can send it to me. I mean, I have. Well, send it to me, and then I'll
there's that. And also, yeah, so another, thank you for bringing that up. So Walt had really great ideas about how we could increase our social media presence, because that's what we're all trying to do constantly, right? We're talking about Facebook and the importance of getting out there. So there is a Facebook event created for this event as well, and I was just waiting to solidify a couple of things, and there's already been people that have found it and have joined, so, and that can be found on the WISE Facebook page. So, yeah, I'm trying to make sure. So it's WISE, W-I-S-E, and it's our Facebook page. And if you want more information, too, you can email me. It's ryan@gowise.org, G-O-W-I-S-E.
You know Susan Harold?
I do.
Susan Harold is a very close friend of mine.
Oh, very nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Cool.
I've been close for quite a few years because I remember her from Aberdeen.
Oh, really? Cool. Susan's great. Susan Harold is our assistant executive director. So, yeah. And she's incredible. Yeah. Did I miss anything?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah. See you there.
And last but not least, on the special orders is Darla, without whom we would know nothing.
Well, I'm actually just here. I'm not going to stand up like everybody else because this is your conversation. Mary just asked that I start you guys on the conversation of your legislative agenda. So, in that framework, I will tell you, the Parent Coalition of Clark County has already created their top three legislative issues for this year. And the number one is to increase affordable housing. Number two is to increase DDA equity for parents and individuals. Right now, what you receive from DDA is based on where you live, not what you need. And that is a very inequitable system. I just came from a very frustrating meeting for a family not getting their needs met by multiple systems within DSHS. And so looking at how do we really look at the equity for the individual, because right now there is no equity. And then the last bullet point that we have is reduce special education discipline. Now this is Clark County Parent Coalition's. This is just a balancing point for you guys. We have not, because we did receive funding for transition students for the next 2 years. We don't have transition students in here. But it's like, okay, so what are we looking at and where do we need to go moving forward, knowing that it's not a budget year, but a supplemental budget. So any questions? What are you guys thinking?
What was your first point again?
Increase affordable housing.
Yeah,
right now we have all of our, so if you look at the DDA caseload, there's like 42,000 to 43,000 individuals in the state on the DDA caseload. There's like 4,000 to 5,000 of them that are in residential. Pretty much the majority of everybody else is living at home with mom or dad.
Believe me, that's a high demand.
It is. And there,
such a high demand.
One of the main barriers to that is that there's not enough affordable housing.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to, as you guys know, PEACE is trying to come at this from lots of different angles. And how do we address this so that we can get our young adults of all ages, like being a grandma of adult now, it's like young adult still gets older and older. So really looking at how do we look at housing opportunities for our individuals.
I think that goes right along with transition though, because I think that can be melded together.
Absolutely.
See, that was a big thing before my father passed away. Him and my mother got together and they were concerned about, because the cost of living is so blooming high where you can basically afford absolutely nothing. So they got together and they decided that they would go ahead and that they would give a certain amount of money to in my behalf, and what was done with that money. It was to purchase me my own living situation, which I now have, and I'm very grateful to have. But see, because of the cost, you know, they were worried about people like myself and other individuals going homeless, because there's so much of that anymore. I mean, there's even people, I've gone down to like the corners of Vancouver, there's people always that have either intellectual or developmental or mental health issues that are always out there with nowhere to go, nowhere to turn to. And what's disappointing to me is when they come out of like state hospitals or places like institution type settings, they have no resources. They're not given a whole lot to go off with. They're just dropped off and said, basically, here, you deal with it yourself. We're not going to.
In addition to the young adults, the other thing that we're seeing, and historically, so I've been doing this for 28 years now. hopefully that wasn't loud enough to get on film or recording, but for a while. And we've always had these families that when their son or daughter turns 21, we have an enormous disproportionate amount of single families. And if you have a single family household and you have an individual who requires more care than what you can get through the DDA assessment,
single parent household,
and you have an individual who requires more care than the amount allowed through the DDA assessment, it's very common that a family member has to quit their job. So what has happened historically for as long as I've been involved is we have many single parents who, when the child leaves school at 21, the parent ends up quitting their job and the family ends up living on the Social Security, the SSI dollar amount, and the parent provider wages. And that, while it was not the best scenario for anybody long term with the way our housing costs are now in Clark County, those families are now homeless. And so, we've either got individuals staying at home who are not safe to be home alone, or we have families being homeless because the parent can't work outside of the home and we can't afford the rent. So I'm very passionate about the housing issue because long term, having seen this, where we're at, and those of you that have been involved in the housing committee that we've had going on now, what Sandy started it 6 years ago, it's a huge issue. That's my issue. So what's your issues?
Well, certainly I say employment is very important, but if you don't have a place to live, your employment, and a lot of people can't make enough with these things to do that.
Right.
So I think they are complementary.
And I think another point that's important to realize that in order for a person's health to be healthy, their mental health and having a place and stable place to be is important, because for like people that have intellectual and developmental and mental health type situations, that's the big thing I see. Because a lot of times what I see is that they're basically put into either like family supported type living situations, like what do they call those houses?
Adult family homes.
Yeah, more or less. That's kind of what I'm thinking. And I don't feel that that's always the best solution. I think there ought to be other alternatives to.
Yeah.
Well, I think too. You know, right now, there we have made a lot of progress with employment. With the economy getting better, there actually zero unemployment. 4.3 is zero actually. There are more jobs, but no one's doing anything about housing. And here, they at least in Portland, they went from 30 days to 90 days. But I don't think here they still don't have that. And people are being thrown out on the road, and they're not just people with mental disabilities or with alcohol or other issues. They're people who sometimes both people work in the house and they still can't afford a house.
Exactly.
Darla, are you asking us what our approach should be for this upcoming legislative agenda, and then also what we've done in the past is the coffee clashes
So this is to get you all thinking about the legislative agenda. The board develops a legislative agenda every year, and you'll need to be thinking about it and be ready to vote in November. Mm-hmm. So it's just to kind of start that conversation, and Darla's giving us kind of some of the background what some other advocacy groups are doing for their agenda.
Because we often do this in our working,
session. Mm-hmm. So, in the past too, so early childhood, I haven't, as a middle school teacher, I'm not there, but that's been on our agenda in the past as well, so.
Exactly.
Attention needed, Fit?
You know, I will tell you, I am not as current on early childhood as I should be, but I'm happy to get you that information, and I can email it to Trish, and she can get the current ESET information out to you.
I guess my question would be, what would you ask a legislature to do regarding housing?
Well, so one of the things, so I'm literally, my brain is just like spinning 190 miles an hour around the housing. So we have a university who has no housing. We have models on the East Coast where individuals live with college students, right? So that there is a lot of really unique opportunities around creating stuff locally. As far as legislatures, we really need to be able to fund whatever it is we need to build. And so really looking at that housing trust fund set aside, and how do we pull together the additional funds so that we can build some affordable, sustainable housing here. Yeah. You know, as we look at housing for individuals, you know, my son is really lucky in that he's in one of the teammates units. But sometimes he'll say, well, I think I'm just going to move out and get a roommate so it'll be cheaper. And it's like, oh, honey, it's not cheaper to get a roommate. And you must go look at the price of apartments, right?
Yeah.
And I look at all the individuals who, you know, whether it's a family or whether it's an individual, how do we do that? And what Patrick was saying about the sustainability, we all need structure, routine, and predictability. And as we go to order of selection, I don't know if you guys heard the way I heard, but who's going to be left out of that is the individuals on the autism spectrum disorder. They're not going to be our number one category to get needs, and they need structured routine and predictability more than anyone else. And so how do we get that and maintain that sustainability for them so that we can, you know, help with the housing and help with employment and help with all of those other
pieces. One of the things that I've noticed in also working with seniors, that same dilemma is also present right now for people over the age of probably 70 maybe. And I just keep on falling back to the reverse mortgage concept, and how a person like some of my family members that have that don't have to worry about a mortgage, but some of the other parts that are expensive, the taxes, the upkeep, and those kinds of things, if you could marry together a person that needs and can contribute that in that relationship. So I think that there's an alliance that could be quickly formed between seniors and people with disabilities and some other groups too.
I wanted to ask, I know we're thinking about our legislative priorities for state legislators, but you know, locally with the new tax for City of Vancouver residents, you know, the city's planning what to do with this tax money. There's been various ideas floated around and maybe shot down, and I don't know what the status of all that is. Because I haven't been as up on my Colombian lately to know if they're having more and more and more meetings, but they were meeting pretty heavily, especially in the beginning when the tax was passed and making plans for the money.
Well, I know that on a county level there has been some assessments and some work done, but unfortunately those assessments and stuff were done very well, but they wasn't done in a way that it really incorporated intentionally individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families.
So how do we get
and so
folks?
That's what we're really looking at. So this isn't about me, but my focus is right now is to work in collaboration with the university to do some assessments targeting what is it that we need to do and where are those barriers. I think I know the answers, but you know, they don't fund people on what I think. So so we're gonna come up with the data and so that then we can maybe go to the Housing Trust Fund and some of those other places. I have contractors biting at the bits to work. I have people ready to donate land. I have housing people that, I mean, so it's like, there is like lots of this going on, but if we don't get the funding from the legislature to help put toward this, you know, and in our community, in Clark County, we have, we're very, sorry, because I could just talk about housing all day, but we're really, we're on the low end for having duplexes or triplexes or fourplexes and options where individuals might be able to live more independently because maybe there's a senior citizen next door or maybe there's a college student somewhere or, you know what I mean? So what does that look like? But that's just one thing. So I just want you guys to be thinking about what your legislative priorities are. I will be sending you information on the babies, the birth to three services. Is there anything else, like any other topic I can provide you information on? The discipline in special education schools is very disproportionate. And basically kids are getting disciplined because of their disability. And so that's something that we're going to try to at least bring some attention to, even if we don't.
You verbalize this. Have you written this as well? Or said, have you got something? Can you just send that to us then?
On the housing stuff?
Yeah.
We have a question behind
too many of us. All of the stuff.
All of the stuff. Send that back to our
members. We'll give it to parents.
So the special education discipline is probably my biggest soapbox. And one of the things that I am most passionate about in this new job, I've been in this job about 4.5 months. So I just completed a series of articles about social emotional learning, and the first one should be published within the next month. But I've got some really great data that shows exactly what happens when special education students are disciplined at a higher rate and how that can sort of trickle down into failure to thrive.
So the bullying follow-up?
Bullying is kind of a different topic. I focused on the topic of social emotional learning because it's a very hot topic in education right now, and OSPI is releasing a new social emotional learning module for everyone connected to the schools. It's a free module training program for helping the schools step up and understand that when a child is acting out, it's a coping strategy, and they gotta get to the heart of what that child is coping with and how they need skills in order to manage whatever has overwhelmed them. The schools are learning this, and they really are starting a new conversation. This is how we have to kind of back around the problem of discipline. But something that I'm very passionate about and working on in every single IEP meeting I go to is making sure that there was a plan ahead, a behavior intervention plan that anticipated a possibility of a behavior issue, because we know what Johnny's, you know, issues are, we know what his disability is, we know what some of the triggers are, we've anticipated that, we've got a plan, so that when that moment happens, there's learning. The response is learning instead of punishment. And there's a huge cadre of new material about how educators can do that. So anything that we can do to further this language, and I'd be happy to send you a preview copy of the first article, which just got approved, but it hasn't been published yet, so I wouldn't say, you know, distribute it widely yet, but for your notification, I'd be more than happy to send you a copy of that first article, which includes some really important resources. But this is gonna change, and the schools want to change, but we've got to keep promoting the new language.
The other reason I asked about bullying is because I have a nephew who has ADHD, and he's being bullied. He actually had to move from a class to a different class because he was afraid of going to school, because you know, you're constantly being picked on or badgered by other kids.
And any student with a 504 plan or an IEP, the school has an added requirement of responsibility to respond appropriately in a situation of bullying. Otherwise, they're a violation of FAPE, free appropriate public education. So in a bullying situation, obviously the bully needs some social emotional training as well. But yeah, there is an avenue to address that as well. So anyway, Darla, thank you for making that a priority, because that's a huge priority of mine too. And anything I can do in behalf of that conversation, I would love to participate and help spread the word.
And we'll be working on this during our working session. So anything you can send to us, Darla, would be really good.
I could also just send an article to Darla and
that'd be great.
I just wanted to, real quick, last year, the agenda, the Parent Coalition's legislative priorities was individual provider workforce shortage, still a massive issue. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what we do about it. Residential options, mm-hmm. special education discipline, and community services. Our senators, Senator Rivers and Senator Cleveland, both sit on the healthcare committee for, they're the ranking Republican and chair for the healthcare committee in the Senate. And so one of the interim projects that that committee is doing is they're going around in the touring RHCs, and they're doing that to look at what needs to be done. And because there's such a huge issue around the capital budget and upkeeping those, but we're really struggling with community services too. So what's happened now is we've done all this excellent advocacy, and we've got everybody service dollars, but now there's no services to buy. So that's an issue. And so I just want to, I'll bullet point some stuff out and send it to you.
Thank you.
Okay, I just feel like some of it, we're, with this housing thing, it's in silos still, and it needs to not be in silos. We need to work together with senior citizens. And
exactly, all that and stuff. That's my goal, is to work together. Yeah. Yeah. But I want to find out what our community needs first, and then we'll go outside of that.
But at some point, could we build a coalition with maybe with like an alliance with like senior citizens and with self-advocates and whatnot?
I bet it already exists. I bet we just need to become more present.
All right. I have a question regarding housing. So I do a lot of volunteer work with NAMI, and I have a lot of friends at NAMI who would love to pool their resources and live in a nice place together, and they can't because of the way their SSI funds are restricted. Is there a legislative agenda question there? So people who receive public dollars to help with their housing have really severe restrictions on what kind of abodes they can live in, who they can live with, and their flexibility in terms of pooling resources with other individuals is really hindered. So is there something that could change in the SSI laws or in whatever other public funding source laws to open up more creative possibilities for housing? I have no idea the answer to that question.
Yeah, that's federal.
Federal, yeah. Good luck.
That's a very good question.
It's a very good question. Presents an interesting fact, which I think is quite true to most. If you see the situation, I myself choose to live with no one.
So this will be on our agenda for the November meeting. So this is not the last time we'll be talking about it.
Time is a god. So thank you
very. Oh, sorry.
Well, I'll dismiss that.
Thank Darla.
Well, thank you, Darla. Yeah. Thank you. Thank all the rest of you too for your attention and your participation. We have to fill out some papers here.
Well, that's our new business, actually.
Do they have to watch this?
Well, they can. They're always free to leave. It's the proclamations. So we have the Disability Employment Month proclamations that are coming up. September 18th, October 12th, September 25th, October 2nd. And October 3rd in various jurisdictions. Yeah, we'll email these out. And so the board is just going to sign up for to go to these. But I will send it out to the people who are here. And if you're interested also in coming to any of these proclamations, you're more than welcome to as well.
Thank you.
So.
Thanks, Helen.
Bye-bye.
Meeting's adjourned.